Good morning, everybody. What's happening? Pete Davidson and the Rotobot Podcast back again. Definitely never done this many podcasts in such a short period of time, but for those of you who caught the draft plan yesterday, sort of ran out of time. I didn't want to do like a two-hour thing. An hour and a half was ridiculous enough. But I thought that getting this information in was important. This is not fun. I'm not looking forward to this podcast because this is the stuff that sort of bends your brain. This is the stuff that, you know, you can't quite put your finger on it and figure out. You know, you have to deal with this stuff. Some of these players are incredibly significant, and I think the process of at least thinking about it is important. Maybe we just come to the conclusion that we're going to fade them because we don't feel good about the information we have, or, you know, whatever the deal is, but it's still stuff we want to talk through, think about, confront it, rather than just sort of sweeping it to the side. So let's talk about the Dallas backfield. There were rumors yesterday about Zeke being offered some, you know, second highest contract ever. Who the heck knows if it's really true or who put it out and for what purposes? I don't think it's very important. But I'm still very much of the belief that Zeke Elliott is going to be in camp. It would be really dumb for him to hold out. This is not a scenario where a guy got drafted in the third round and is making mediocre money while they take, you know, tread off his tires. This is a guy who got drafted high in the draft. He will be turning down big money. And he's playing for a team. I mean, come on. Dallas is inclined to pay this guy. They took him high. They've dealt with all the stuff he's put them through in terms of off the field. And he's a big-time player. So, you know, this is not a Le'Veon Bell kind of situation for a couple reasons. A, you know, the Cowboys aren't as smart as the Steelers. B, I think Zeke's a better back than Le'Veon, particularly in all the in-between stuff, blocking, chipping, all that. I mean, Zeke is top, you know, just top shelf. So he's a guy who helps your team win, in my opinion. I know there's some analytical stuff to the contrary. I respectfully disagree. So to me, Zeke's going to sign, and I'm just going to play him that way. I'm not going to gift him to the team in the seventh spot or something like that. I'm going to just take him off the board. I am going to move him down to fourth because there's no reason to not just take one of the other three elites. If for some reason we find out that Cam Newton is significantly hurt and for some reason is going to like miss the season, which I sort of doubt, but you never know, then maybe we'll mess around with the idea of moving McCaffrey to the back end of the tier as well. So we'll put Barkley and Kamara up top. But at this point, I think if Newton is facing something that's actually an injury that's going to keep him out, it's probably, you know, again, a couple weeks before week one still, and, you know, maybe he misses a game or two. In that scenario, I'm not too worried about McCaffrey, who is, you know, would turn into a big volume factor without Cam. They would need him even more, but he would become significantly less efficient. So I don't think it'd kill you. And I think you could wait it out until Cam gets back. But back to this backfield. Zeke is my four at this point. I'm putting him at the back of the tier. I've got Pollard up inside the top 100 now, which sort of gives me a little bit of an upset stomach. Please read what I'm writing there. I'm moving him up in the moment as Zeke is not in, because if Zeke doesn't play, they're committed to this guy, it would appear. Okay, so Pollard's going to be a huge factor if Zeke doesn't play. If Zeke doesn't play, Pollard should be probably, you know, he should be like in the fifth round or something like that, maybe higher. But again, I think Zeke is going to play. And when Zeke gets back into camp, I will definitely slide Pollard back a little bit. But he does look like the handcuff to Zeke in an offense that we sort of trust from a running perspective. They've got that line, which, you know, always opens up holes and the center's back. So there's so many good reasons to like Dallas from a running perspective. So, yeah, Zeke stays in the four hole because he's good and because the platform playing for the Cowboys is so good. And then, you know, Pollard looks like, for the first time, sort of an exciting backup to Zeke. So, you know, I take high-end backups, you know, in that area right after 100. So probably Pollard just moves back, you know, 10 to 15 spots, and we target him as a handcuff kind of thing. And a handcuff that would have some standalone value in deeper formats. Okay, so that's sort of where I'm at with the Cowboys. And look, if your tolerance for risk is different than mine and you want to avoid the headache, you know, take Johnson, take Chubb, take your highest rated receiver. It's certainly a viable way to go, and I'm not going to kill you for it. But I'm just telling you what I'm doing. Okay, here comes something where I'm just on the other side of the spectrum. Melvin Gordon and the Chargers. The Chargers are incredibly tight-fisted. They always have been. They've taken many holdouts into the season. They've messed with players who absolutely deserve the money. So the idea that they're going to cave on Melvin seems unrealistic to me. Moreover, they've got two running backs that they've already proven can play in their scheme. They did it last year. You know, Justin Jackson and Austin Eckler are solid backs. They're on the small side. Neither one of them, I think, is going to be a huge volume runner. But they're good players. I think what the paradigm we saw last year, sans Melvin, will be the same. Eckler will probably be the most primary of the two. He'll probably get the bulk of the passing down work, should have more value for fantasy. But Jackson probably gets, about half the snaps, probably keeps pace with Eckler in terms of carries, and I think would have some solid standalone appeal. And, you know, he's a guy where I'm, you know, he's right in that group, in that 110, 120 area where I'm looking to partake. So I'm full fade on Melvin. I'm not drafting him. I can't imagine a scenario where I draft this guy at this point. I mean, unless he is slipping really far, like into the fifth or something like that. And even then, I've got to feel good about what I've built to take on that kind of risk, even in the fifth. So, yeah, I'm just off Melvin right now. You know, he's probably going to go in the first three rounds in your draft. If not that, probably early fourth or something. I think at this point, he's going to cause you to get off to a slow start. You're probably going to have to go in on Eckler fairly early. It's a big commitment for a team, you know, that at times sort of throws a little committee and games at you. Anyway, I love Melvin. If he was locked and loaded, he'd be right at the end of the first round for me. But the way things are looking now, the fact that he seems dug in, the fact that the Chargers can be real blanks, I'm just fading him completely. And I'll partake of Eckler. I will sit there. You know, I'll go on Eckler for me as early as late fifth. I would take him. Am I targeting him? Not really. But in certain situations, if I'm on a zero RB build, which is certainly possible, depending on how things shake out for me in round one and so on and so forth, you know, why not? I mean, it makes a lot of sense. So I'm prioritizing Eckler and Jackson in this backfield if I get involved at all, and that's where I'm at. You know, if you feel like taking a chance on Melvin, hey, you do you. But to me, it's just too risky. I see like a week 10, 11 return in this, you know, whenever he's first eligible to come off, when, you know, essentially he's going to come back at the last moment when he's going to get the amount of accrued games, which I believe is six, to qualify so he can, you know, move forward. You know, I don't want to get involved. Now, Melvin, is Melvin a guy we might target, you know, when we get a little bit towards that window? You know, if we have a team that's light at running back and we're 5-1, you know, and the Melvin team is where they probably are going to be, sort of sucking wind, he could be a trade target for us. We may end up getting in the Melvin Gordon business, but I'd prefer not to do it on draft day. Okay, here's maybe the biggest one, the Rams backfield. Todd Gurley, I've been talking about him, as I said yesterday, I've been talking about it the whole time, and I'm not willing to give up on this guy. He's too good, but more than that, The Rams offense is just too good, and it's a good scheme. We know that they use Gurley so much inside the red zone. And when I think about this, if you're the Rams and you want to try to save Gurley a little bit, well, where are you going to do it? I mean, you're not going to do it in the money zone. You're not going to wear Gurley out between the 20s and then bring in somebody else for the glory. I think if anything, it would be an inversion of that, where they bring in the satellite backs to give him a little juice, you know, when they're in the middle of the field, on their own 30, that kind of thing. Maybe Gurley is supplemented a little bit on early downs. And maybe he's supplemented a little bit on passing downs, too, with Henderson. You know, I don't know exactly how it's going to work out. But unless there actually is something wrong with Gurley in the moment, I don't see them saying, let's take him out in the red zone. I see them, let's take him out when we can use the other guys to almost the same effect. So, if I'm right, I think I am, then Todd Gurley's still going to be that guy who's getting tons of the red zone love in the Rams. And if that's the case, this guy could be a fringe RB1 just on the stuff he does inside the 20. I mean, he gets such a high percentage of the juice once they get down there into scoring range. So, for me, I'm very willing to take Gurley where he's at ADP-wise. I'm not going to do anything silly like take him in the first round because, A, I don't need to, and B, I think that would be too risky. But as I said yesterday, if I'm the team sitting there right before the bigs come back up, the bigs being teams that had like top three or four picks, and I'm seeing teams that have Zeke, Kamara, Barkley, CMC, and I have the option of taking maybe my best ranked receiver or, you know, some other running back who I like but don't love, I think maybe I'll just take Gurley. And then I'm probably, in that scenario, I'm probably either like Odell Beckham Gurley or Devontae Gurley or Chubb Gurley. And you know what? I'm okay with that. Like, I'll roll with that against the bigs and see if that can be the way I take it. And then, you know, if a player comes back in the third round, we have the option to go running back again. Depending on how things are flowing, we may say, hey, let's target a running back in the fourth or the fifth. But, you know, if I take Gurley, I'll probably be in a heavy RB build going out of the fifth round. I'll have probably 3 out of 5 picks being running backs. And then Gurley becomes my flex that I play when he's healthy, but my flex dominates. So, I don't know. I think I encourage people to be open-minded to taking Gurley. If you do it, you should probably be a good player. You should probably be the kind of player who can backfill after that. If you're an inexperienced drafter and you don't really know what you're doing, then I think Gurley is a little bit more of a long putt. If you're the kind of owner who likes to really enjoy his week-to-week experience through the season and you don't want to do something that's going to cause you to step in a pothole in week 3, then avoiding Gurley makes sense too. So do what feels right to you, but I am not going to sit here and say fade Gurley, because I think in terms of getting the top prize in certain situations, especially in that later part of the second round, I think it makes sense to have some exposure. Now, look, I play in a lot of leagues, so I can have a few Gurley teams, and if badness goes down, it's not going to ruin my year. For folks who only have one, and again, if it means a lot to you and you really live week to week with your team, I can understand you not wanting to deal with the headache. I can understand it. My big point, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, my big point is, if it's all about winning the league, I think there are applications for this player that might enhance your chances. All right, next up is AJ Green. Another just not fun one. Green is, you know, a guy who's changed the dynamic in the early parts. This is a guy who probably would have been part of our core stud group. He would have extended the value of the first round, perhaps. Would have been a guy who could have helped those teams at the second turn between the second and the third round. So in some ways, if you're a middle of the pack team, Green, I guess this could sort of help you. The situation is that this is a surgery situation, and we don't really have a return date. You know, that's the thing about, you know, training camp. They don't always give you good information in terms of what they really think about a return date. I have a feeling he could be back in September, but I'm not willing to bet on it. I mean, it seems like an October return is very possible here. If that ends up being the case, you know, how early can you take this guy? Even if he comes back and plays like a ball of fire, you know, if you take this guy inside the first four rounds, he's probably going to put you in a hole. And now we're, you know, talking about an older player coming back off of surgery that happened during camp, playing on a team that lacks talent, doesn't have a great offensive line, is playing a new scheme that he didn't get as much time to get comfortable in as we would hope. Now, obviously, AJ Green can play any scheme, but, you know, there's just too much risk here. We don't, and you know, we can't assume that he will play like a ball of fire, by the way. So, I mean, do I like AJ Green? Hell yeah. I think he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, or at least he's got that kind of talent. But for redraft this year, I don't know. I'm just going to fade him, and I'm going to let somebody else take him, probably in the third or fourth round, or maybe even early fifth. And you know what? It's not going to be my problem. I'm really leaning in on trying to make sure my team's going to get out of the box strong this year. And to take a guy who's going to be out for X number of weeks, to me, it has to be more compelling. Like last year, I did it with Edelman. I knew he was going to miss 4 games, but I got him in like the 7th round in the leagues I took him in. And the thing about Edelman is we knew he was going to come back healthy. You know, it was a suspension, okay? So that's different. If AJ Green was on suspension and he was coming back after 4 games, I might look at this differently. Or if, you know, Tom Brady was his quarterback, that would help too. So I'm just fading Green. You do what you want, but I'm in full fade. Let's get back to Andrew Luck. We've talked about him a little bit. I sort of, my feeling on this thing, and look, this is just gut, I'm sort of 80% trusting what the Colts are saying. This doesn't feel like something that's going to knock Luck out. It does feel like something that maybe could keep him out week one or two. So I'm going to fade Luck because I was always a little, I was already a little bit concerned that he might be on the overrated side because people were paying so much for him. You know, he's not a quarterback I have to have. So I'm going to fade Luck just for the risk factor. I've moved Mac down just a teensy bit. I've moved Hilton down a teensy bit because with Brissett running the show, I don't think they're going to be as good. But my feeling is that Luck's probably back. I'm gonna still take his weapons at a slightly discounted price if they fall to me, but I'm fading him. I just don't see any reason to mess around when we're dealing with such a deep field of quarterbacks. Now, granted, if a couple more of these things happen and all of a sudden, you know, we're dealing with Cam Newton's potential injury and Luck, and, you know, maybe we get to a point where these guys fall enough where we consider them, you know, that's up to you where you want to get involved. For today and today only, I'm probably fading Cam Newton until we get some information. Once the information's that, hey, he may miss time, but it's not going to be extended, I jump right back in on Cam. And that could hopefully be like by this afternoon. Let's talk about the Tampa backfield. It's interesting. I mean, I don't really think anybody's looked awful in preseason. I saw somebody talking about Rojo missing a pass-blocking situation. I mean, if it's the play I saw, the guy was in the middle of taking a play-action handoff. He didn't miss his coverage at all. He just saw something happening, tried to pick it up, and it looked like he missed a block. All these backs, I think, are progressing. When I look at the ADP, the guy I'm most interested in is probably the least sexy of the bunch in terms of what people think, but it's Peyton Barber, who I've always thought was a pretty solid back. I think, at least early in the season, Arians is going to trust that solidity of Barber on early downs and probably mix in Jones here and there. Obviously, Dare Ogbunle and Andre Ellington could be factors as well. This thing's wide open. I mean, you can take cracks at any of these guys in deeper leagues, and that's fine. I think the thing I would try to avoid here is trying to triangulate this backfield by adding more than one of them, because I think no matter who you add, you could get burned. I mean, there's nothing worse than saying, hey, I'm going to try to lock down this backfield, waste two roster spots and a bunch of draft capital, and then some guy you didn't draft emerges and takes the thing. I mean, it's possible in this backfield. So, you know, I personally, I'm probably looking at a flyer on Barber or maybe Jones. Jones would have to slip a little bit. Barber at ADP is like around like 110-ish. I think in a lot of leagues, he's slipping further than that. So I'd have some interest in Barber, and certainly this is a backfield I'm on. Like, I could see prioritizing one of these guys in week one free agency if we learn a little bit more when the bullets start flying. I mean, I want Bruce Arians running backs, sure, but I'm not throwing money at 25% propositions if we're in part of the draft where I've got 50% propositions, 75% propositions. That's the problem. Okay, next up, the Eagles running backs. Like every running back the Eagles have, I like on some level, okay? But it sure seems like the two guys emerging are going to be Jordan Howard, who they went out of their way to get when they had all these other guys, and then Miles Sanders, who they used a second-round pick on. Sanders, obviously, much more explosive. Jordan Howard, obviously, much more of a grinder. I think both of these guys are going to have roles. I also think that given how much they leaned in on Sanders, they must want a more dynamic player in that backfield. We've talked about Sanders' handle. I've looked pretty closely. I feel like he's made progress. And I'm not the kind of person who likes to give credit on these things. I'm sort of a skeptic when somebody's been a fumbler. But I think he's showing a tendency to be a little bit more careful between the tackles. He's keeping that second arm on a count longer. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I saw this guy with a weak handle in traffic when I was watching his film at Penn State. But it seems like he's gotten a little better. I'd like to see a couple more runs where he gets out into the open field to see if he's still sort of letting that elbow get outside. But you know what? I think there's a couple things I want to say here. First of all, I trust this coaching staff. I think they're smart. I think they know what they're dealing with. And I think the fact that we see some technical advancement is good, and it's an indication that more is to come. So this is a player I'm willing to take the chance on in redraft, okay? I'm really willing to take the chance. And if he gets to me in the, you know, mid, late fifth, maybe even early fifth in certain team build situations, If I'm in a position where I can afford to miss, like if he's my third running back and I'm just trying to put an exclamation on things and the tight end I wanted isn't there, or maybe all three tight ends are still on the board and I feel like I can put it off till the sixth round, there's definitely some scenarios where I'm going to grab Miles Sanders in the fifth. And then in a lot of places, what I'll do is just hope he makes it to the sixth and then really kill. So that's sort of where I'm at with the Eagles backfield. I'm going to target the guy who, if he gets it big time, and the guy who catches passes. Let's move on to the Steelers wide receivers. We hit these guys yesterday. As I said, you know, Dwayne McFarlane, Context Matters on Twitter, excellent follow. And he, my feeling on the Steelers receivers all along was that the guy I really wanted to get was Deontay Johnson. I mean, obviously we all want Juju if we're willing to pay, and if we get a crack at him, Juju's easy. But the way the rest of this thing shakes out, Dwayne made an excellent point on James Washington, and it's a point that we made on James Washington when we watched his college film, which is that we love this guy once he gets into his route. A little bit of a concern about him getting into his route, and Dwayne is noticing that at the pro level. He's noticing that the Steelers are sort of gaming around that, and what that indicates is that the X spot sort of comes down to Moncrief versus Deontay Johnson. And I think as the season progresses, even though I think Moncrief will do a solid job out there being a field stretcher, big play kind of guy, I think that Deontay Johnson is more dynamic. I also think if teams are going to come up and sort of press the rookie kind of thing, I think they're going to get burned. So if I see Deontay, I mean, first of all, on deep leagues, I'm targeting Deontay Johnson with like my second to last pick. First of all, deep leagues. So I'm talking like 18th, 19th, 20th round, stuff like that. Maybe even the 17th, okay? But for teams where I do not roster Deontay Johnson, I'm going to be really on it week one. I'm going to watch that team. I'm going to try to determine their intent. And if I feel like they're grooming him for a breakout in a couple weeks, I'm just going to stash him. So just for what it's worth, I think Deontay Johnson's a guy to watch. clearly, he's like a 50-50 shot. I'm not trying to say this guy's going to, you know, the next coming or anything, but I really do think he's got breakout potential for the Steelers. And think about it. If you're the Steelers, getting a dynamic downfield threat to go with the volume they want to give Juju makes a lot of sense. I mean, it really, really does. So I think that's something worth monitoring. Speaking of the Steelers, Antonio Brown. We talked about this yesterday, but I'm just going to sort of reiterate. Yeah, he's moved into this area where he's become sort of an eccentric. But I just don't feel that this guy wants to end a Hall of Fame career with the whole world laughing at him. I mean, that might be a little simplistic. It might be a little too narrative driven. But, you know, what else do we really have at this point, right? So where he's going towards the end of the second round, he's usually going to teams that already have a stud running back. I mean, if I start my team with Kamara and I have an opportunity to take Antonio Brown, knowing I'm coming around with a quick third round pick right after that, and I'm going to be able to add another back, you know, unless he retires or gets hurt, that feels like a move that's going to win a league for me. So I'm very, very okay with taking Antonio Brown at ADP. Amari Cooper's foot. Now, I moved Amari down. I don't know if I'm going to move him back up, but I'm okay taking him where I have him now. Everything I've heard about his foot is that it's probably a pain management issue. As I said yesterday, and I apologize, sometimes I get into the injuries I've had over the years, but I've had so many, and I've rehabbed so many with other athletes, and I've talked about injuries with all my teammates over the years, and plantar is one that I've actually had, and my teammates have had, and it's something that we all were able to play through. It never took us out. It caused us pain. It made getting loose really hard sometimes, and it made the day after playing painful. It eliminated you from getting a quick turnaround. Like if you wanted to, you know, stretch and work out the day after a tournament, that might be a bit of a long putt. But I don't feel it's likely to take him out. So I don't think the risk factor is huge. I think there could be a slight performance factor sometimes if you're missing practice, that kind of stuff. But I feel okay about Amari. I'm not going to run away from him. Same kind of thing with Keenan, who I've moved back up. Everything I'm hearing on him sounds like it's really a management issue. You know, they just want to make sure he doesn't suffer any setbacks. It sounds like he's targeted for week one. And if he doesn't play week one, it's probably out of an abundance of caution. So I'm okay leaning in on Keenan where we had him the whole time. Last thing we're going to talk about is Chubb and Hunt. I told you this was going to be a quick podcast. I just didn't want to short you guys on this stuff. I feel like it's not cool to avoid the elephant in the corner. You got to talk about this stuff. So I just wanted to be upfront on how I see it all. Let's talk about Chubb and Hunt just for a second. Now, I've moved Chubb up into the first round. And it's funny. I did that, and now I'm noticing everybody's taking him in the first round. I guess it has something to do with Duke Johnson. Ironically, Duke didn't have a whole lot to do with why I moved up Chubb, because I sort of felt like Duke was on the outs there anyway. I wasn't really factoring him in. To me, this is much more about who do we want in round one. We want stud runners who have guaranteed locked-in volume jobs. Well, Chubb is that. He's got that, and he's on a team that I feel good about. Why would I wait for the second round for this guy? It doesn't make any sense. So I've moved him up ahead of David Johnson. The one thing I think we want to think about there is it's a horses for courses thing. I sort of have them tied for the fifth spot. If I'm getting points for receptions, I'm still willing to take Johnson over Chubb. It'll be sort of a, you know, full PPR, I am taking Johnson over Chubb. 0.5, I'm maybe flipping a coin. And in, you know, in standard, I'm taking Chubb. So, you know, I've got those guys. It's sort of a feel thing. Depending what kind of league I'm in, depending on how I want to start, do I want security? Do I really want to go for it? You know, I think Johnson has the big ceiling because, I mean, you know, if the Cardinals have bigger designs for him than even we realize, and they could, like, if Kingsbury's smart, David Johnson isn't going to be a running back in this scheme. He's going to be a running back slash wide receiver. David Johnson's a better wide receiver than some of the guys they have. When you consider that their ability to move him out of the formation, not out of the formation, but to change his role within the formation pre-snap is going to gain him matchups they can rarely get with another wide receiver. So when you put David Johnson at receiver, you're creating a real situation for a defense. Now, is Kingsbury going to be as smart as Arians and figure that out and not just realize it in his mind, but apply it and get aggressive with it? I don't know, but if he does, David Johnson's got a shot at being RB1. So I'm not out of the David Johnson business at all. I'm just sort of acknowledging that there's some volatility to it. So I think sort of Chubb is the bird in the hand pick, and I think, you know, David Johnson is the go for it pick. You know, do what you feel right about. Okay, so we got this thing in under 30 minutes. I'm gonna wrap it up. You know, hopefully you guys got a little something out of this. If not, my apologies. I'm going to be sitting down with Jimmy Hackett in about an hour. We're going to record a pod that drops Saturday morning. We'll be Sunday morning on the Fantasy Football Hour as normal. It won't be a live recording. It won't be a live show. It will be a recording. We're going to record that today too, because the Tuna Draft is this weekend, my favorite day of the year, and all my good buds are coming down. It's a high stakes, big buy-in draft, full auction, and it's guts, man. I really can't wait. So good luck to all of you who are drafting this weekend. There will be an update to the cheat sheets and the Rotobond 500 before tonight, so this afternoon, go grab some fresh sheets. Remember, the Excel versions and the number versions, you can take them and tweak them, put your guys where you want. I set it up so you guys can sort of take my ideas and then expand on them, okay? So once again, thanks for being there this August. Thanks for listening to everything I've done. Thanks for reading the 500. If you're not following me on Twitter, you know, please consider to do so. It's the easiest way to engage with me if that's something you want to do. My handle is @Rotobond, so it's nice and easy to find me. And once again, thanks to everybody. And I'd like to thank the people who made donations over the last week. And I particularly want to thank the people who left notes with the donations. I love that when I go into my PayPal, and not only do I see, you know, a little chunk of cash, which puts some wind in my sails, but, you know, the story of why they still stick with the site. And some of you guys have written some really nice stuff. I almost got emotional on one of them, I'm not going to lie. So I really appreciate that. For those of you who have the time to leave a rating and a recommendation, a little blurb on why you like the podcast, I really appreciate every single one of them. And seriously, go out and crush it this weekend. I think we're all ready. I think we're there. We spent a couple weeks grinding, you know, fine-tuning this thing, and we're going to continue to do it. The updates are going to continue. I'm not done. I just wanted to get all this stuff in place because I know some of us got our big stuff this weekend. I mean, obviously, everybody wants to draft next weekend when we know more. But, you know, a lot of us play in multiple leagues. So there's big drafts this weekend, and I wanted you guys to be ready. But we're not done. I will be updating the 500 all throughout next week, and the cheat sheets are going to keep getting updated. So keep checking back. There's going to be more podcasts. Martin Frank of the Eagles next week. Excellent beat reporter, friend of mine. We're definitely going to find some good stuff for you there. On Tuesday, Lord Reeves is checking in. So we're going to take our discourse to a whole other level because Rich is smarter than I am. So we got good stuff coming, all right? Good luck this weekend, everybody. Kill it.